Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So gas prices are going up, 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 up. And I can't tell you how many people I've run into that have told me it's all Joe Biden's fault. It's either Joe Biden's fault, it's the Green New Deal's fault, which, understand, there is no Green New Deal in place. So I don't know which orifice they're pulling that from. Or it's, you know, space lasers or pedophile Martians or some other bit of craziness. When the reality is the reason gas prices are going up, good old-fashioned economic supply and demand. And what we find out from the folks over at Axios is on July 9th, there were officially 378 active rigs pumping oil out of the ground, down from the pre-pandemic level of over 600 and down from the year before of over 800. So it just comes down to basically there isn't enough supply for the demand. And when, again, I'm not the economics professor, but that seems pretty simple. When your inventories are at the lowest level since February of 2020, supplies are getting tighter, prices go up. Now, is it Joe Biden's fault? No. It is the CEO's fault, though, because I believe they're part of the, hey, we can get more money for this. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, obviously gas is going up. Fear of inflation. In fact, a lot of stories that the 70s are coming back. I've asked our good friend Mateus Fernando to come talk with us. He's a professor of economics there at Bucknell University. Mateus, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Rick.
So inflation is going to come back. It's going to be back to where it was in the 70s. We're going to need a wheelbarrow to buy bread. The sky is falling, Mateus. Don't you know?
Yeah, yeah. The 70s show. Yeah, we talked. Yeah, it's amazing how it's persistent. Yeah, and it's a short-run story. I think that the good thing on this, I would say, it seems that Powell, Janet Yellen, and most of the people around President Biden have not bought this sort of inflation paranoia story. So it seems that they will not do what will be a mistake. So the only reason you should do, stop spending and do contractionary policy. So stop fiscal expansion or plans of fiscal expansion, like the infrastructure plan that now they agreed on a $3.5 trillion of additional spending, which I hope they do go ahead and do. At least that's the plan. So they're blaming, I should say, the spring package for this inflation too. So, or worse, hiking rates of interest and whatnot. So, the only reason to do something like that is if we had, reasons to believe that this is excess demand, that it's coming from, either the government is spending too much or people have too much money and are spending too much. And hence, that's the origin of inflationary, sort of crisis. And we should be sort of stopping demand and pursuing austerity, policies. But clearly that's not the case. So what seems is, as you were saying, so first of all, we've been through a significant crisis. The crisis has, one of the things that grew the most other than energy prices, which you were talking about, it's cars. And a good chunk of this is supply constraints. We don't have enough chips. The production has been stalled, all of this because of the issues that came with the pandemic and whatnot. So this is a blip. So it's not something that will persist. And I should point out the reasons for us to know that, we don't have, excessive demand. It's that wages are not growing desperately. And we still have about whatever it is, the number, 7 million jobs less. You probably know better than I do. I haven't checked in the last few days, but 7 million jobs less than at the beginning of the, half a million less industrial manufacturing jobs. So from the beginning of the pandemic, so since last March. So things are, we still have a lot of people that have not gone back to the labor market. They are discouraged. They are still afraid with good reason. The Delta variant is still there. Lots of people not vaccinated. So the reasons for these hikes in prices are associated to supply constraints that were mostly caused by the pandemic crisis, which, obviously it's not the fault of the president. And we do need, for reasons of short-term recovery, because we still have unemployed people and the labor markets are not tight, more stimulus, And we do need, for reasons of long-term growth and the health of the, you know, the well-being of the people in the country, more spending on infrastructure, on health, on you know, environmental sort of solutions for the crisis that we're clearly in. And you know, and that's just to number a few of the things that we should be spending more. So those things will not lead to inflation. This is inflation paranoia. I should add here, and you know this, the other reason why this is not the 70s show, and it's a bad thing in my view. You know, I wish we were there, that we had to moderate the strength of the labor, you know, force and the unions and their bargaining power to really push for higher wages. And you'd say, oh, you know what? They're pushing to wages that are too high, higher than productivity, and we cannot cope with all of these huge sort of increases in wages that workers are getting. But that's sadly not the case. That's not where we are as a society. So the reasons for having that kind of fear are absolutely absurd.
No, I'm right there with you. And I wish we had the labor movement that had the strength to be able to take advantage of this movement, this moment. Because I go back to when my grandparents were working. In fact, you know, I talk about it all the time. I've worked my entire working life under the National Master Freight Agreement, which was first negotiated back in 1964. And in that are cost of living adjustments. During the 70s, when inflation was going up, wages were going up automatically because of the contracts that the workers had. We don't have much of those around anymore. And for me, I wish we were able to take advantage of that, because I look at it as, you know, inflation is bad if it gets out of hand, but a little inflation, I don't think is going to kill us.
Oh, no, inflation, you know, you just said it. Inflation, if it doesn't hurt the workers, it's not particularly bad. It doesn't do anything, you know. I mean, we don't know. I mean, in all fairness, I'm not kidding. There are studies of the World Bank. They cannot prove anything. Yeah, you know, it doesn't hurt growth. It doesn't hurt income distribution. It doesn't, you know, inflation below levels that are very high. Look at what I'm going to say. In the studies of the World Bank, inflation below 40%. Not 5%, which whatever it is that we have annualized for the whole thing now, you know, and it's a blip. It's, you know, it's on a monthly. So this month, the annualized rate is like 5%. It's not going to be 5% for the whole year, but yeah. So 40%. And I live through inflation, I should say. I come from Latin America. I live with 2,000% inflation. So I know what inflation is. This is not inflation. You know, it's just a little sort of, you know, little increase in prices. And so inflation of those levels has no impact whatsoever. So I'm not supporting that. Let's have very high inflation. What I'm saying is, you know, much worse than inflation is deflation. So the Japanese case, in which they have had for over now 3 decades over deflation, that's something to be scared of. Deflation hurts, hurts debtors. It creates much more difficulty for the economy to grow. So there are significant negative impacts of deflation. Moderate inflation is actually a positive thing. The Japanese are trying to stimulate and have a little bit of inflation for, you know, the last 3 decades, and they cannot manage it. So I think increasingly there is a consensus between economists that deflation is the real danger, not inflation.
Right. So, you know, I'm looking at this, and again, you know, everybody I talk to, they're freaking out because, hey, I don't know if you know, Mateus, but a sheet of plywood's $80 now. Used to be 45. Everyone's freaking out because they don't think it's ever going to come back. I see it as a lot of corporate opportunism. I see it as supply chains are still jammed up. I'm still thinking that there's a way back. I'm curious your thought.
So, you know, what was the price that you said that went up? And
somebody told me the last time he bought a sheet of plywood, it was $80. It was like 45 before. And I argue it's a couple of things. It's obviously the supply, probably not being produced enough. I would argue that there's a huge home building boom going on. And then the other one's opportunism. There's an opportunity to go, hey, you're going to blame all this stuff on the pandemic.
Yeah. It's like somebody was saying something about building a deck, and the price of wood also went up significantly. And I do think that some of those things will come down. So there are certain things that go up and down. There are certain things that, you know, they only go up. So they never go sort of down, but they doesn't mean that they will sort of keep going up. So they reach a plateau. So, for example, nominal wages, it's very rare that once you give a wage increase that the wage goes down in nominal terms, because the way to bring that down is they bring it down by not readjusting it. So the real minimum wage, the minimum wage has been stuck for whatever, since 2009. And so the real minimum wage has gone really down. And so that's the way you adjust something like that. So the wage has a floor, no ceiling and a floor, but that doesn't mean it doesn't go down in real terms. Things like, you know, certain commodities, the prices go up and down. Energy, you know, will go down again. I think that there is no doubt about that. You know, certain, I mean, long term, I'm not talking long term. There are other issues in long term, you know, with global warming and so on and so forth. But and certain things are clearly cars. Cars, it's typically, as you were saying, a supply chain constraint. Part of the things you want to do actually to solve supply, you know, constraints is this massive investments in infrastructure. So if we do produce certain things, if we say that, for example, for health reasons, you know, we do want to have certain things in the supply chain produced within the United States, and we go for producing a certain amount of chips within the United States, you know, that obviously will make a difference in the ability and the supply capacity going forward in the future, and so that will have an impact on prices in the future. So expanding productive capacity is an important thing, and that's one of the things that investment in infrastructure does. So I do think so. Short answer, yes, I do think that many of those things, the prices will come down.
Yeah, I agree with you. Now, Rick Scott, the senator from Florida, came out and said the Biden agenda is spend. So they should be known as big government, big taxes, big deficits party. He went on to say that, you know, we're at 100% of GDP. This is horrible. We're going to saddle generations of kids with debt. It's the end of the world. The sky's falling. We can't possibly afford what you're talking about, Mateus. We can't invest in infrastructure. We can't invest in healthcare and education and all that stuff, because we're evidently, according to him, we're broke now. They gave it all away in the tax bill that he voted for.
Well, yeah, it's convenient. We're broke when it's convenient for them. 3 years ago, they were all for, you know, 4 years, whatever it was, the tax cuts, that Trump, gave to most of the wealthy people, and they were all for that. So, you know, I always tell my students, you know, if you look at, I do own the big government, big spending, and big taxes. I have no trouble with that. The Industrial Revolution was done on you know, England accumulated 260% of debt to GDP, 260. So we're about 100. Yeah, we're short. So it was down on a mountain of debt. It's one of the, you know, fantastic sort of things that it was created in the Western world. So many things, most of them were created in China, in Asia, the developments that allowed the development of technology. But public debt is a Western invention that allowed governments to produce this significant sort of enlargement of demand and gear that to a process. It doesn't necessarily, so I'm not saying that all spending is good, don't get me wrong. So wisely spent. So if you don't think that the proposals in the Biden administration plan, the one that it's been discussed in the budget committee with Bernie and, you know, trying to have a broad coalition that everybody agrees. So if you don't think that spending on global warming is a good idea, if you don't think that spending on health is a good idea, if you don't think that spending on you know, rebuilding the infrastructure of this country is a good idea for growth, which allows you to have more income and pay more taxes, and on top of that, charge more taxes of the very wealthy, that they should pay a higher share, then yeah, sure, we're on a different side of this. But the notion that we're broke and this cannot be done is absurd. It was done in history. We've done it here in this country. It's perfectly reasonable, and I would say it's more than reasonable. It's the only way out of this incredible crisis that we are still immersed into.
So last line of questioning I've got for you, because it's a $3.5 trillion plan that they're going to move through reconciliation. There's some on the far left. You've got, you know, the Squad folks saying it's not enough. We want $6 trillion. Is $3.5 trillion enough? Personally, I'd like to see more, but at this point, I'm going to take what I can get.
Oh, I agree with you. If I could get the six, sure. But you know, if we can get Manchin and Sinema in this, and they do pass this $3.5 trillion, you know, through reconciliation, this is of historic proportions. This is I think that, you know, from the New Deal through Truman, through the fact that Eisenhower didn't sort of roll back any of the reforms of the New Deal, and the Kennedy Johnson administration that finally expanded the New Deal program, and you got, you know, not just socially, you know, civil rights, but you got Medicare, war on poverty, so programs for dealing with poverty, you know. We only got ever since that, you know, I mean, there's some legislation on environment by Nixon, but we went downhill fundamentally from then onwards. And so Obama did expand a little bit health, and that's the first uptick that we're going to go back at doing something that is, you know, increasing the size of the world. This would be of historical proportions. This brings us back to the 1960s to say that we're again moving the state as being an agent of the promotion of the well-being of the people in this country. And that is for the first time since, you know, Reagan said that the you know, the government is part of the problem and not the solution. It will be a turn, a complete, 180 on the policies of the U.S. government. Because I'm sorry to say, in many ways, Democrats, had not done that before. So neither Clinton nor Obama, you know, although I acknowledge, yes, the health care, you know, they have not done something on the dimensions of what's on the table right now. And I think I'm optimistic that if they do this, we will see, a change, not just in the economy, but in the political climate of the country. Because I think that's the other thing. I think that people are angry for a reason, and they're angry because they have reasons to be angry. You know, the economy has not treated them well. The country, you know, this is a country that the wealthy are doing very well. I always say the United States is doing fine. It's the people in the United States that are not doing fine, and that's a sad realization.
No, you're absolutely right. And for me, this is maybe the mending of that social contract that was ripped apart during the Reagan era and forward. But Mateus, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Always great talking with you, my friend.
No, the pleasure is mine.
Good stuff. Our good friend Mateus Vernengo, professor of economics there at Bucknell University. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.